nationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author Steve Klein sits down with the most fascinating difference makers in Dallas-Fort Worth. Hear from top CEOs, local entrepreneurs, and key playmakers in business right now with your host, Steve Klein.
William James said, "If you care enough for a result, you will most certainly attain it." Hi, I'm Steve Klein, and welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. In the studio today are two guests who attain results. Our first playmaker emigrated from rural Mexico, learned to speak English, became a U.S. citizen and an FBI agent, while our second playmaker oversees the customer experience for 18 million customers. With us today is the CEO of a polygraph testing company that has, as he says, his taco stand. Well, our next playmaker leads more than 3,000 associates. These great playmakers are Hector Ruiz. Hector is CEO of Ruiz Protective Service. And Myron Watkins. Myron is Customer Experience VP of Greyhound. And we're going to begin today's show with Myron. Myron Watkins is Vice President of Customer Experience for Greyhound Lines. He's responsible for developing and implementing the company's customer experience strategy in the United States, as well as ensuring that employees provide excellent customer service to passengers at terminals and on buses. He provides leadership to more than 3,000 associates who interact with approximately 18 million customers each year. Coming to Greyhound in 1988 through the company's management training program, Myron has worked in multiple aspects of operations from terminal manager in Denver and Dallas to director of customer service at the company's corporate headquarters. He's also served as district manager in Atlanta and New York, as well as general manager for the eastern region of the United States. Myron, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Hi, Steve.
Well, you're in charge of Greyhound's customer experience, as I've mentioned in the intro. But a lot of people don't really think of Greyhound and customer experience to be one and the same. So what are you doing as customer experience manager to really change that perception?
We are enhancing the experience for all of our riders. It's something that we've been doing for many years now, and specifically we started it in 2007, 2008, where we started to upgrade the experience for all of our customers. And it really started with the purchase of our newest buses that we started in 2008.
Well, tell us about the buses, because you have new amenities, and a lot of people haven't been on a Greyhound bus in a long time. Now you're really upgrading, doing some things that they wouldn't expect. So talk about a little bit what you get now when you buy a ticket at Greyhound.
Well, absolutely. Well, our buses nowadays are very fuel efficient and very modern and up to date with all of the different types of electronics. We have free Wi-Fi for our passengers. We have increased legroom, in many cases more legroom than what you'd find on an airlines. We have power outlets, so if you have your laptop, your e-reader, your phones, you can charge them up while you're on your 2 to 4 hour or cross-country journey on a Greyhound bus.
So I almost can be in the office, basically have the buses in office while I'm traveling cross-country.
Absolutely, and we have found a lot of the customers are surfing the web and staying connected with friends and family as they're traveling on the bus.
Well, Greyhound has hit a milestone. I believe it was May you actually turned 100 years old.
You're absolutely correct.
And I'd like you to talk a little bit about the background, because most people don't know how Greyhound started. And tell us how that happened, if you can talk about that, and what the company is doing to celebrate 100 years.
Absolutely. So we started in 1914 in Hibbing, Minnesota. It's a small mining town, approximately 70 miles west of Lake Superior. It was started by a Swedish immigrant named Carl Wickman, who saw an opportunity to transport people who lived in Hibbing to the mines in Alice, Minnesota, approximately 2 miles away. And he purchased a 7-passenger Hupmobile, and he charged 15 cents one way, 25 cents round trip, and there started Greyhound. And we like to believe we came from some humble beginnings with just one bus or one vehicle, and now a century later, we have one of the most iconic brands in the world. We have destinations that total over 3,800 across not only the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, and we've got a fleet of approximately 1,600 buses. So quite a journey.
That's a tremendous amount of vehicles. You said 15 cents and 25 cents. That's probably a lot of money back then. But he had an idea just to move people back and forth And it grew.
And it grew. And as you mentioned, so here's our milestone that we're celebrating this year. And it was on May 9th, our actual birthday, where we had a surprise celebration for all of our passengers in all of our company-operated facilities across the U.S.
Now, I'm willing to bet, if we're interrupting you here for a moment, but I'm willing to bet most of the passengers had no idea that this was the 100th anniversary.
They had no idea.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And we've been looking forward to this for probably the last 2 years of this celebration. And so on May 9th, we had a surprise celebration in all of our company-operated facilities where we had live music. We had food, we had beverages, we had prizes, we had raffle giveaways, and we told people about Greyhound's 100 years of existence. And we also are in the middle of our centennial tour that is crossing America. We're going to be in 40 cities across the U.S. We have a north tour and a south tour. And in each of these tours, we have our historic fleet. We've got our 1914 Hupmobile, our 19.
Now, is this the same Hupmobile?
The exact same Hupmobile.
That's amazing.
Slightly refurbished, but is the exact same one that people can see. And so we have that on one of the tours. We've got the 1931 Mack bus, the 1937 Yellow Coach, the 1947 Silverside, and the buses that a lot of people are familiar with are our Scenic Cruisers, both from 1954 and 1968. So we have those traveling with the tour. We also have a mobile museum traveling with each tour. We've taken a bus, refurbished the inside of it, and turned it into a walking museum where people can interact with our 100 years of existence. And of course, we've got our new buses on display as well, so everybody can see the new buses we've purchased that we've talked about already.
Now, how can people find out where those are going to be? Because that sounds fascinating, seeing those old vehicles. I'm just into any kind of vehicle, the old vehicles and the riding museum.
Well, you can find it on our website, greyhound.com, and you can also find it by reaching out to us on social media. We actually have the historic fleet and the tour here in Dallas right now. It's at the State Fair of Texas, and it'll be on display until October 19th when the fair ends. And people can visit the buses, and the Hupmobile is actually there as well. And they can interact in a Wi-Fi lounge that we have set up. And there's prizes and giveaways and a great experience for everyone.
Well, I'm looking forward to it because I'm planning my State Fair experience right now. Where would I find that at the State Fair?
It is located on the fairgrounds in one of the halls. I'm not sure which one. I'll actually be going there.
But it is indoors.
It is indoors, correct.
Okay, fantastic. Well, you are Vice President of Customer Experience. And we were talking before the show started about the fact that I work with a lot of clients on helping develop customer experience, and experience is really the key word because you do what any other transportation company does, but it's that experience customers have. So talk a little bit about what you do running that to help your employees give a great customer service both in the terminals and on the bus.
Well, you're right. We have to set ourselves aside from the competition, and our competition is not only other bus companies, but it's the automobile. And it starts with our employees, with the 6,000 employees we have in Greyhound. And as you mentioned, over 3,000 of them actually interact with the customers. It starts with giving them excellent training. And it's delivering that experience to the customer that not only will create a satisfied customer, but also that loyal customer that they'll continue to return. So we make sure that we're giving out accurate information. We work very hard to have on-time departures. We average greater than 90% on-time departures from our originating locations, which is better than some of the airlines out there.
I would guess knowing what's been going on, that's a very, very quick. That's amazing. Well, you have, as far as your amenities, you have some premium amenities, but you also have something called the Blue Experience. What is that?
It's the Blue Entertainment Experience. So that's something that we recently rolled out in 2014, where people can actually view movies, television shows, and download music while they're on the bus. So not only can they connect to the internet and listen to things they may have, but if they didn't bring anything, they can actually watch a movie through our entertainment system. So we're looking forward to rolling that out to more of our fleet, not only in the remainder of 2014, but also 2015.
Well, you mentioned that some of your competition is cars, and from some of the information that you had said, you're helping get cars off the road and reducing emissions by people riding the bus. But who rides the Greyhound buses? Who are your customers?
Well, let's talk about some of the customers. Before I do, let me kind of talk about the affordability of bus travel.
Do that.
Many studies have shown that the price of a bus ticket is about 52% less than a rail ticket and approximately 79% less than an airline ticket.
It's very affordable then.
It's a very affordable way of traveling. But a lot of people equate that with the people that travel by bus are homeless or don't have any type of income. Our surveys have actually shown us something quite different. About 32% of our riders have an annual household income of $35,000. About 75% of our riders have a degree higher than a high school diploma. What we have found is our customers are on average 18 to 35 years of age. They're on a budget, but they're looking for that value-added experience. And bus travel still today on Greyhound is the most safe, the safest way of traveling, certainly the affordable way of traveling, and the most convenient.
Well, in the information that I had read about that, one Greyhound bus takes an average of 50 cars off the road and achieves 184 passenger miles per gallon of fuel. If everyone took buses, we probably wouldn't have a fuel problem. That could drop the gas prices quickly right there.
You're absolutely right. And we are finding that more people are coming to the bus industry because people are moving back into the urban areas. They don't have vehicles. And that's what our challenge is as an organization, not only Greyhound, but our parent company, First Group, which is located in Aberdeen, Scotland. Our mission is to provide those solutions for this congested world by providing the transportation options.
Well, you have talked about where Greyhound started. Matter of fact, most people know the name Greyhound because I believe Greyhound, the company became Greyhound around 1930, so most people know it as Greyhound. Where is Greyhound going? And we also talked about an iconic brand. You look at that Greyhound figure, that logo, and I'm sure people can picture that in their head. You can also see it on Greyhound.com. But where's Greyhound going over the next 100 years?
Well, we'll continue to purchase the newest equipment that's out there, which our customers have overwhelmingly told us they like, all those wonderful amenities. Technology is a very important part of our growth strategy going forward. One of our brands is Bolt Bus, which operates in the Northeast, the West Coast, and the Northwest. And we have already launched with that brand a mobile app, where people can have the convenience of purchasing their ticket via an app and show up at the bus and just show us the app. Greyhound will be launching its mobile app later this year. And in 2015, we're looking at more enhancements via technology. We're looking at some dynamic pricing engines, which will give our customers greater travel options and pricing for their journeys.
That's amazing. A lot coming from Greyhound, and that's Greyhound.com. Myron, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, Steve.
Myron Watkins is VP of Customer Experience at Greyhound. But don't go away. We're going to have another guest right after the break. And he is the CEO of Ruiz Protective Service. And we're going to have an interesting conversation about what that company is, where it came from, and what they do. This is Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. Back right after this.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
Their names are Vivian, Bryce, Zoe, and Joshua, ages 5 to 12. They are part of a very exclusive club that neither they nor their families want to belong. They've all been diagnosed with some form of pediatric cancer. Each year in DFW, hundreds of families hear the dreaded words, "Your child has cancer." Wipe Out Kids Cancer helps families cope and support researchers looking for a cure. Our mission is simple: to work relentlessly for the day when all children are living cancer-free. Learn more at WOKC.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. We are definitely going to have an interesting segment with Hector Ruiz. Hector is CEO of Ruiz Protective Service, and they provide services ranging from armed and unarmed security guards to drug testing and even polygraph services. RPS is also heavily involved in a project to implement technology solutions to manage the sex offender and law enforcement polygraph programs. Hector was born and raised in Mexico. He immigrated to the United States when he was a teenager. He then graduated from the University of Texas at El Paso, attended the Dallas Police Academy, became a Dallas police officer, and later an FBI agent. And we'll talk more about that story. But Hector, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Glad to be here.
I'm going to say a number of things in this question I'm going to ask you. So we're going to have to talk about a lot of this. How did the Grasshopper King unintentionally become a Dallas police officer and later basically develop your own taco stand?
Well, perhaps I need to start by defining or explaining what the Grasshopper King is.
I would like you to do that.
As a child in Mexico, we were poor. We were probably some of the poorest people even for Mexico. And so we really had no way to make money other than we got up every morning and we decided what we needed to do for that day to survive for that day. And as a child, obviously, I had needs and desires. And I noticed one day that the ladies in town had birds, and those birds had to eat something. And usually it was grasshoppers, which they usually caught themselves. So my brother and I, as children around 4 or 5 years of age, would go out with a stick and catch grasshoppers and store them in matchboxes. And then we would go to town and sell them to the ladies who own birds. And that was how I became the Grasshopper King. Little did I know that that was really the beginnings of a business person.
Well, that was your entrepreneurial spirit starting out right away at a very young age.
So as a teenager, my father decided that we needed to move to the United States. And he did it mainly. He was very happy in Mexico, but he knew that his kids wouldn't have any opportunities in Mexico, at least not what he dreamed that they should have. So we moved to the U.S. We moved to a rural area outside of El Paso, Texas. We enrolled in school, and I quickly learned English and went to college at UTEP, University of Texas at El Paso, graduated within 3 years, and a friend of mine
who, let's hold on just a second. Sure. Keep that thought in your mind, but tell everybody why you graduated in 3 years.
Well, I graduated in 3 years because, frankly, coming to the U.S. as a teenager is a little different than coming as an adult or as a small child. As a small child, this is it. This is your country, and you don't know any different. This is where you grew up, even though you were not born here. As an adult, you came here because that was your desire. As a teenager, I came because my family brought me. So I still had my friends in Mexico. I had a great desire to go back to Mexico, and I couldn't think of a faster way to go back to Mexico than to just go ahead and finish college and get back to Mexico.
So you were very focused on getting in and out as quickly as possible.
I had no desire. And unfortunately, we came to the U.S. at a time when discrimination was still fairly rampant, and so I felt
there was still a tug to pain. Go back home.
Yeah, I felt the pain of that, and I wonder why I was here when I could be very happy at home, where there was discrimination as well, just not this type, not based on the color of my skin, but rather on my, you know, on my economic status, okay, which is different. Then something happened. It's hard for me to tell you what that is other than something clicked in me that says, okay, it's time to make a decision. You either go back to Mexico or you stay here, and if you stay here, you become an American. So I very quickly – and it was much easier to become a citizen back then than it is today, frankly. Okay, so within about 6 months, I became a U.S. citizen, had made the decision to stay in the U.S., finished college in 3 years because that had been my goal all along. And then I was faced with, okay, what do you do now? You need a job. And a friend of mine who had always dreamed of becoming a police officer told me that he was going to travel to Dallas, 600 miles away, to apply for the Dallas Police Department. I came not to apply for the department, but just simply to for the ride. I had never been in a big city, wanted to see it. So we arrived in Dallas, and I accompanied him to the police department. They started processing him, and the recruiter looked at me and said, well, where's your paperwork? I said, there isn't. He says, why not? Did you not bring it? I said, no, I'm not applying to be a police officer. I have no desire to be a police officer. Well, after about an hour, he talked me into filling out the applications. A week later, and we stayed here for a week, they did all the testing in a compressed cycle of 1 week. They offered me a job. Unfortunately, they didn't offer the job to my friend, who had dreamed of being a police officer, and that was the longest 600-mile ride back to El Paso of my life.
I'm sure you felt tremendously guilty.
And honestly, I lost a friend in the process because he could not understand why they wouldn't hire him when he wanted to be a police officer. I had expressed no desire to be one, but they offered me the job. And he asked me if I was going to take the job, and I said, yes, I love the city. I don't know what this is, but it's an adventure, and I want this adventure. So I came back, attended the academy. I was a police officer for a few years. I ended up meeting some FBI agents on an assignment, and I was still young and single. And they asked me why I wasn't an FBI agent, and I said, I never thought of it. And so about 6 months after that, I'm attending the FBI academy in Quantico and became an FBI agent. And I was very, very happy. Those are probably some of the best experiences I had, both being a Dallas police officer and being an FBI agent. However, deep inside of me still beat this desire to have my taco stand.
And that's the next story. Talk about what your taco stand actually is.
Well, my taco stand is every immigrant's dream. You know, when you arrive in this country, you come from another place where things are different. You know, there isn't usually, at least in the old days, the traditional 9-to-5 job, especially if you come from a rural area. So you're accustomed to doing things on your own. You're accustomed to getting up every morning, and every day you have to figure out how you're going to survive that day. There is no long-term plan. There is no pension. And so that's kind of, I think that's, you're born with that desire. And so I that's still beat in me. And so I had I wanted to take action on that, and I did. So I went to the agent in charge of the office that I was assigned to in Houston, and I said, I'm leaving the bureau. And he says, okay, what's the joke? I said, I'm leaving the bureau. And after a while, he understood that I was leaving, and I opened up my taco stand. My taco stand turned out to be a polygraph company.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but they told you this was not going to be successful.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. What are you doing? This is a dream job. People spend years trying to get into the FBI. You're in, and you're leaving? I said, yes, because I love this job, but it's not what beats inside of me.
Well, okay? Your business, and by the way, if you'd like to check on the website, is RuizServices.com. It's Ruiz Protective Service. But it's really, you've had a two-phase business. You've been in business for around 30 years, but it's two different 15-year segments.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Talk about that first one and how you started and what you did for those first 15 years.
Well, when I left the FBI and I started a polygraph company, I was basically a one-man operation. There was so much work I soon found that I didn't even have a listed phone number anymore because I couldn't handle all the work that was coming my way. I had no office. I had no advertisement. I just had an unlisted phone number, and people found me. And basically, I did interrogation work and polygraph work. And I worked from Los Angeles to Alabama. In fact, I got a call one time from a guy in Alabama, a guy I'd never heard of. And I'm living in El Paso at that point. And he says, I've got a problem, and I heard that you can probably solve it for me. I said, well, I can't promise that I'll solve it. I can promise that I'll try really hard. So he owned grocery stores in little towns throughout Georgia and Alabama, and I had never been to Georgia or Alabama. So I flew into Atlanta, rented a car, and I spent about 3 weeks hitting every little town where he owned a grocery store, and he was having tremendous losses. So much so that he thought that he was going to lose his business. And suddenly I'm in rural Alabama in little towns, basically interrogating people that work in these little towns, and they're all related to the local chief of police or the local or the mayor or somebody. And I'm getting confessions from them. And it was interesting because I hit every little town very quickly and got out very quickly and never told anyone which motel I was staying at.
Must have been you seem to be at the right place at the right time. You've created success for yourself. But that changed, though, in the 90s.
Yes.
Tell us the next move your business had.
Well, we were living in El Paso, and I moved my business from Houston to Dallas to El Paso because I could see changes coming in polygraph, and there was a Congress passed a law that almost killed all of the polygraph industry. So I moved to El Paso so I could do work in Mexico just in case, and I did that for a few years. But then, by then, I was married and had kids. And frankly, I was looking for a better school system than what they were in. I was really tired of my oldest kid coming home with nothing but hundreds on his report card. And I knew that it was really not that my kid was a genius because he's smart, but he's not a genius. But he just wasn't being challenged. So I went about and researched the best school district, public school district that I could find that was in Plano, Texas. And so we moved to Plano for that reason. But at the same time, you know, I'm back in Dallas, and I decided to explore other options. And one of my friends who owns some grocery stores down in Oak Cliff said, I want you to start a guard company. I said, no, I don't want to do that, man. I don't want to manage people. And he said, no, you have to start a guard company, and I will give you my account. I said, your account is 4 stores, you know, working part-time. So I'm sorry, I don't want to do that. But he talked me into it. So we started the guard service. And I thought, well, you're at the dance, so learn how to dance. And a few years later, frankly, it's difficult for me to explain to you how it happened because it just did. We had over 600 employees, and we were doing about $16 million a year in business. And we're down a little bit from that. But we've been very successful, and our polygraph business is now one of the largest in the country. If you draw a straight line from Dallas to El Paso, we polygraph pretty much everyone who's on parole for sex crimes, and a lot of the people are on probation as well. We've since added a division to develop software, and we're big believers in software solutions to problems that traditionally don't use software. We're developing now a system to manage the sex offender program, as well as for law enforcement pre-employment testing. So that in a nutshell, is the history of the company.
And in about the last 30 seconds, dealing with the sex offenders and helping remove sex offenders seems to be a mission of yours.
Well, actually, what I would love to do, my mission really is, and it's a dream that will probably never come true, is that one day there'll not be a need for my service because no one is committing sex crimes against children. Obviously, that's a lofty dream. That's probably not going to happen. In the meantime, we have to figure out how to manage the program, how to keep the community safe. And the sex offender program is a very complex problem because who we label as a sex offender is not always the monster that people envision. Sometimes it's people that get caught up in the system that really don't belong there, but there they are because politicians have decided that it's a good idea to throw a large net that catches everybody.
That's a tremendous story. You may want to go to Hector's website, which is RuizServices.com. His company is Ruiz Protective Service. Hector, thank you very much for being a part of the Playmakers Talk Show.
Glad to be here. Appreciate it.
Glad to have you here. Hector Ruiz is the CEO of Ruiz Protective Service. Thank you very much for listening to Playmakers Talk Show. Join us again next week. We'll have more great guests on the show. You can also go to the website, which is playmakerstalkshow.com, and see the guests that we've had, see the guests coming up, and hear our podcast. That's playmakerstalkshow.com. We'll be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
Who will Steve be interviewing next? Find out on Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein every Friday afternoon at 3 on 770 KAAM. Hear this interview again by going to Steve's website, playmakerstalkshow.com.